What's going on, everybody? Jason English here, the OG Headhunter. I got a special guest for you, somebody that I've known for a long time. Been in the AE industry, been at all different levels of the AE industry, somebody I'm super excited about talking to today. Everybody, want to welcome Chance Staley to the show today. Chance, how you doing?
Hey, Jason. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it. I'm doing good. How are you doing?
Fantastic, man. I appreciate you asking. So, a little bit about Chance's background currently. Currently, right now, you're the, or why don't you tell us a little bit kind of what your title is now, and I want to take a little walk through memory lane.
Yeah, so currently I work for an energy company out of the Boulder office as a developer for renewable energy projects, primarily solar and battery storage in the California market, so CAISO Grid. Totally a little bit outside of my normal experience to end up in a role like that.
Yeah.
But it's definitely been a part of, you know, future thinking and
and
getting there.
Well, why I wanted to talk to you, Chance, because I feel like out there's a lot of people that are going to listen to this. You've been on the construction side,
yep.
Construction management. You've been on the land development design side.
Yep.
You've been on the developer side, and now you're kind of a pseudo on the developer side for a large energy company.
Yeah.
So, you know, we'll take a walk a little bit through that journey, through your journey, but let's kind of take a step back and tell us a little bit about who you are originally. I always want to say you're from Kentucky. Are you from Kentucky?
No. I wish I was. I love that place.
Where are you from?
So I'm originally from California.
Okay, that's right.
Yeah, my family, we moved to Ohio, and then I wanted to get out of Ohio, and I moved to Kentucky for college. Lived there for about 10 years in Lexington, and then eventually this recruiter in Denver named Jason English called me and was like, you want to come to Denver?
Man, he must be a good dude.
He's all right.
Got him. And okay, so you let's go back to college. Okay, let's kind of even take a step back from there, Chance. Before college, so engineering, civil engineering,
yeah,
construction management. That's what you started in, correct?
Sort of.
Well, before you answer that too far, how did that evolve? Like, do you know somebody in the engineering world? How come civil engineering? What's kind of how'd you end up in it?
So, like several people I know, my grandfathers were both in the AE industry in some capacity. So my one grandfather was an architect, and my other grandfather was a mechanical engineer. And high school, I was a pretty talented artist as well as a good STEM student.
Okay.
You know, good in the math, good in the science, things like that. And I really wanted to be an architect. And so I wanted to follow in the footsteps of one of those grandparents. And I applied for architecture school when I was going off to college, because you apply for certain programs specifically. And I'd committed to going to the University of Kentucky. I really liked the school. And I didn't get into the architecture program, which baffled my teachers in high school. They were like, how'd you not get in? You had one of the best art portfolios and architecture portfolios of any student we sent off.
Now, what are you just drawing buildings, or are you drawing custom homes, or what are you drawing?
All kinds of stuff. I had a little side hustle when I was in high school of doing pen and ink and watercolor drawings of the wealthier people in town's homes.
Okay.
And I'd sell them to them.
Oh, that's cool.
And so I'd whip out these kind of, you know, think 24 by 36 perspective drawings of pen and ink, watercolor it, and sell it to them. They'd hang it in their foyer.
Okay.
And so I had lots of these to use in my portfolio, and I did. And I also completed the, you know, basic prompts that they give you for that. They say, like, do a helicopter over a building, you know.
Yeah.
And just, you know, random things. And so I didn't get in. So I you know, in my 18-year-old ignorance, I selected civil engineering because I thought it was basically the same thing as an architect, which it turns out it's a very different profession.
You still do art? Is it all engineering, structural, architectural related?
No,
or do you do like
portraits?
Okay.
So portraits are like my, it's probably one of my hobbies. I love doing portraits of people. Won a bunch of awards for portraits I've done.
Sweet.
Mostly in high school and some in college. And it's just an enjoyable way for me to vent and things like that. It's just one of those hobbies you do to relax. And I love to get out the graphite and the charcoal and sit there. And
love it. I cannot relate. I can mess up a stick figure, bro. So,
well, we know that.
Okay, so your two grandfathers, both engineers, and then you got into, you just picked civil engineering because you said, hey, this is close enough?
Yeah, well, and I figured, I'd get into civil engineering and who knows what would happen from there. Actually, originally it was mining engineering because that was a hot topic at the time with, oil and gas industry and things like that. And this is, early 2000s. And, so that was kind of the original direction that I thought I would go. But after kind of learning more about mining engineering, I felt like civil engineering was more my interest. And so I went that direction instead.
Okay. Did anybody imperative to that decision outside of your grandfather's?
I wanted to make my time at the college and university level count, especially since I was, for the most part, self-paying and working my way through. I wanted to, enter a career path where I knew there would be a market that I could at least pay back these student loans and there would be work available for me. You got to remember the same time was during the 2008 recession, and the market had just collapsed in every which way. It was a great time to be in school. Yeah. Not a great time
to be paying back those loans.
Yeah, not a good time to be out in the workforce trying to pay off those loans. That's pretty true. My timing was divine for that reason.
Did you tell us about, what was college like? How many hours were you taking? What were you doing, any extracurricular activities? What was your college experience like?
So I wrestled and I was a fraternity guy at the University of Kentucky. And, being a fraternity man had a lot of skills that came out of that, a lot of good social skills, I believe, come out of that. You're much more comfortable talking to others. You're much more comfortable with public speaking. And I was really involved with an organization called NSP, National Society of Professional Engineers.
Okay.
I was the University of Kentucky's president of our chapter there. And we did a lot of FE and PE test prep for various engineering disciplines and held a lot of events on campus. And, it was fun. My performance in college and the amount of hours I took really fluctuated as I matured. I actually went to college twice. So the first time was in my, 18 to 20 year old, took a couple years off, needed a break. I questioned for a while if school was right for me, and then kind of got my life together and a little more organized. And with that kind of a recession, my college fund got completely destroyed through the recession, and I had to figure out how I was going to pay for this. And it was just tough. It was tough.
Just overwhelmed with the amount of classes you're taking, or just not being mature, not being mature enough.
I mean,
just being a ding dong, or what?
Yeah, being a ding dong at 18 years old. Just not really knowing. You're still a kid, but they expect you to act like an adult.
Oh yeah.
And I wasn't ready for college at 18, but when I went back to college, I was ready. I wanted it.
What age did you go back to college?
I went back to college when I was, 22. So
okay.
Something around there, and was able to really hone in on coursework and things like that. And I had the drive to just kind of finish. So my first few years, I would take bare minimum full-time status, 12-hour credit semesters, and have a great time as a fraternity guy. And then the second time around, I was taking 18 to 22 hours a semester.
So you're just grinding.
Just grinding, yeah. I worked for a couple different firms over summer jobs. That was the nice part about being a civil engineering student. Really easy to get those extra internships, co-op programs, etc. And really helped me get a pretty big diverse set of experience to help pick a focus. And, the civil engineering profession, there's a handful of focuses: environmental, geotechnical, structural, transportation, land surveying. I mean, the list kind of goes on a little bit. And so I picked one. I was a structural engineering student. I took a summer job with a structural engineer. I realized that was not the path I wanted to be on.
How come?
I just didn't enjoy the work. Kind of being an artist and those kinds of things, you know, civil engineering can be a great art, but one of the pitfalls is, like, in structural engineering, it's looking at tables and going back and forth on a design to size a beam or a member, and creating thicknesses and stuff. It's not, you know,
you
aesthetic.
You didn't find the art in it.
No, I didn't. And so I ended up with a land development firm, and I was able to really find how art and science kind of meshed in that. And, that I found that to be, like, the direction I wanted to be in was I want to be in the land development world. Unfortunately, colleges, they don't have a land development focus for civil engineers, because that's kind of a general practitioner. And if you think, like, in surgeon terms, you know, a general surgeon can do a minor surgery on most parts of your body, but you wouldn't want a general surgeon to do a very complicated heart surgery or brain surgery, right? You'd want someone that's really a specialist in that. And that's where, yeah, like, your structural engineers, you know, most structural engineers couldn't grade a site, but they could really size all the beams and they could build you a bridge across it. You really love the gunshots, don't you?
Shots fired, structural engineers. You better be able to grade a site.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to have one on now next.
Oh, good.
And I'm going to ask him what he thinks about that. But no, that's fair. What about when you're in school? So any advice, anybody listening to this that's in school juggling a lot, let's say maybe that you would give your 20-year-old self when you decided to step away, and then your 22-year-old self stepping back in, or how you might have balanced it better.
I would 100% say that college is not a requirement for people. I was actually having some discussions last night on this subject with some folks I know. And you know, the thing is, a lot of people go to college because we expect it as a societal norm. It's the only way you're going to get a job. You know, the things that we're told that might have been true a generation ago, but, you know, today we're seeing a huge shortage in vo-tech. We're seeing a huge shortage in just labor force in general. And everyone's running around with, you know, 3 or 4 degrees, way overqualified. And they're working at Starbucks. And there's nothing wrong at all with working at Starbucks, but, you know, when you're wasting the kind of money on a college education, and that's the end of your career path, is you're in a service industry job like that, you kind of really have to ask yourself, like, was college actually the right decision financially?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't think my kids, unless they're in 5%, 5 different professions, I'll tell them, I wouldn't go back and do it again. I think that engineering, though, is one of them.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I concur with you. Engineering is one of those professions that, college is great for. Yeah,
they're going to need one. Trust me. Yeah. I hire them all day. You're going to need at least a degree. But what about, for those engineers juggling those different, let me just kind of piggyback on what you said, going into structural, right?
Mm-hmm.
Finding a little bit more feel land development. Because my advice, too, because I talked to a lot of people in that same situation, is maybe don't be afraid to switch. Mm. Don't feel like that you made a decision now you got to stay there.
It's your career, you know. It's not your school's career for you to live. You know, I mean, you're pressured as a student to pick those focuses, and you get into it, and then you think, well, I've graduated with a focus in structural engineering or transportation engineering. I'm going to go be a transportation engineer because that makes sense.
Yeah.
The thing is, you can parlay that experience and that knowledge base into so many different facets. I mean, I've met guys that have engineering degrees, civil engineering degrees, that are in software sales.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they're killing it.
Yeah.
You know,
if you hate it, leave.
Hate it, leave. Absolutely. Don't be afraid to leave. Call Jason. Jason will find a new and exciting role for you. The benefits can happen, but really I think some good planning on what you want to do. And if you're going to pick a focus, go work for a firm that does that.
Yeah.
And learn about that before you graduate with it.
But you got to do it early, because nobody wants nobody's going to pay a 10-year structural engineer the same amount of money to figure out if they want to do, you know, grading sites, right?
Water resources.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was it easy for you? Were you just like, yeah, not doing structural, done with that?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, okay. I remember I had my first little bridge project, and it was for the Kentucky Department of Transportation, and I was like, I don't really enjoy this. And so I started working with the land development guys within the company. There was a pretty big land development department. They were, you know, about 50-50 focused on transportation and land development. And I really found that I enjoyed that.
Okay.
And that, I would say, kind of pointed me in the direction of where I wanted to go next.
Yep. Time to go.
Well, and, you know, I think a big part of it was I started meeting my clients, right? So they were clients of the firm. They weren't, you know, chances, clients, but I started meeting some of them, and you know, my clients was actually, they were holding the role that I really wanted. And, you know, kind of through discovery of like, what path did they go on? How can I refine my skills to get into that role? I want to be that guy. And, you know, when I identified, hey, that's what I want to do, it was to be the actual land developer, not the land development designer, you know.
Well, let's not jump too far into the future. So you graduate from college,
yep,
with a structural engineering degree, general civil
with a focus in structural.
Okay, and then you jump in immediately to land development.
Yeah.
Okay. And were you in Kentucky?
Yeah, I was still in Kentucky.
Okay. And what was that job?
Yeah, that was at a local firm, and you know, they did a lot of land development. I mean, that was their thing, and they, like I mentioned a second ago, they were kind of 50% transportation work, and that was all over the facets from structural to water resources and then just pure transportation and traffic. And then the other side of the company did all, you know, essentially commercial and residential civil engineering general package.
Big company, small company?
About 50 employees.
Okay.
Wasn't big, wasn't small.
And 50 might even be a stretch. Interesting dynamic for 50 people.
Yeah.
Full transportation with a single family, multifamily.
Yeah, single family, multifamily, and commercial real estate. Okay. So it just kind of, it varied who the clients were, you know.
And what were you doing? Were you doing design, learning design?
Yeah, I was learning design and doing some design.
Okay.
I mean, they can only teach you so much in college. Yep. And, you know, how to run the software isn't necessarily one of those things. So learning that and getting good at that. And then, you know, continuing to refine those skills and to be able to see. I remember my first mentor, his name was Steve Garland. He used to say, you need to learn how to see in 3D. When you look at the screen, you see the lines on there. You need to imagine what they would look like in 3D because you're looking at it in 2D. And he really taught me how to do that, you know, by just working with me and be like, you know, is this going up or down? You know, and just little questions. And he worked with me. And a big part of this profession is the mentorship component.
Yeah. Hope you read a topographic map, too, when you're out hunting and stuff, huh?
It sure does. Nothing like thinking of hills a valley.
And where was that? Where was that at? Integrated Black Engineering?
It was Integrated Engineering.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so you were there for a while, and then you moved around. And what were you, weren't you on the construction side for a point? Construction management.
So I kind of did a handful of different things. You know, just kind of trying different things. I thought land development was the right fit, but I was still curious about some other things. So I kind of went to work for a geotech and civil company. They kind of did both, and did some construction management, construction inspection work. Did some geotech work. Did some civil work. And kind of just got a little bit more of a diverse experience. You know, at Integrated, I met some clients, like I said, that had the job that I wanted, and they had really diverse experience. Mm-hmm. They were truly kind of the jack of all trades, master of none type. And I was like, you know, that's going to be the path forward if I want to get their job.
Yeah. And then you moved to Colorado.
Yeah.
Tell me, was that planned? Was it out of what brought you out to God's country?
You know, it was summer of 2017. I just bought my first house in Kentucky, and I got a call from you. And, you asked me if I'd be interested in coming to Colorado and coming to work, and I was interested. I said, yeah, you know, I'm interested in that, but right now it's not really a good time. I just bought this house. Like, you know, I was like, call me in a year.
Okay.
Do you remember that conversation?
No, this would be fun. I don't.
So you called me in a year.
Okay.
It was summer of 2018. And you said, hey, it's been a year. I got some opportunities out here in Colorado.
The mountains are calling.
I
hate when they do that.
I know.
They bring everybody out here.
You can't leave after you get them too. And, you know, I took a job here in Denver at a family-run engineering firm that you placed me at called Caliber.
Yep.
And
Good company.
Yeah, worked there for several years. Really enjoyed my time there.
And that's really, I mean, when you were at Caliber, I mean, you really got to sink your teeth into the design element land development. Yeah, is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, I mean, that's what I did all day.
And every time I talked to you, you loved it there.
Yeah.
You loved that element of engineering for a very long time.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, there's several components to that. I mean, you know, you got to think about licensure. You got to think about things like that and sticking it out for the long haul to get that licensure. The PE license, you know, takes 4 years of working under another PE. And, you know, so that was always in the back of my mind. I have to stay in this for at least that long.
Okay. And then, so, you know, this is a big element because you, a lot of people I feel like are, you know, you'll come across really, really happy on the design side, but mm-hmm. you'll always hear them say, hey, I want to get to work and go to work for a developer, right?
Yeah.
And but you moved from the design side from a company that you really enjoyed working with for a long time, and an opportunity came up and you ended up taking it to work for they're a home builder, right?
Yeah.
Okay. And tell me about how was that job? I mean,
I loved it.
Because I feel like you're in a different, you know, like, you spend so much time, you're now the client.
Yeah.
You know? But tell me about how...
You know, when I talked about that first client, right, that I had in Kentucky, and, you know, he was the director or VP of land development for a builder there, and I really liked what it looked like he did for a living. You know, I was like, I could see myself really enjoying this kind of work, getting out from behind the computer screen, getting out from behind the line work, you know, and actually being more in the action, more real world.
Okay. Right? Did when you were at Caliber, sorry to take a step back, were you doing much business development? Were you able to do much business development or?
Yeah, you know, I was trying to.
Okay.
You know, a lot of it was stewarding existing client relationships. We did a lot of federal work.
Okay.
So really working with the VA and the DOD on you know, keeping that relationship alive, being likable, and working closely with them.
Well, it's got to be nice going from wining and dining the clients to being the one that you get wined and dined.
It is. I mean, that's definitely enjoyable, but I love the relationship component far more than the food.
Yeah.
Drink, you know, I mean, the relationships that I've formed by being the client are just so valuable to me. I mean, I have so many that I would call now like friends.
Yeah.
You know, it's not friends turning into vendors or clients. It's vendors and clients that are turning into friends from continually working on their relationship with me. Cause they're, I mean, it started out trying to sell you something.
Yeah.
And it's, and through that it's really turned into like, hey, like, do you just want to hang out? Cause we're friends.
Yeah.
Now. You know?
Yep, absolutely. Well, I always tell people in any people use the, I always make fun of people because they put the word, any new trendy word they'll throw in to wipe off like what people used to call it. Like I still call myself a headhunter and that's a bad word. Then they got, you know, recruiter, talent acquisition. I don't, whatever, call it whatever you want that makes you feel better. And same thing with sales, right? People, oh, it's business development. It's whatever it is. But no matter what you want to call it, you're in the people relationship business.
Absolutely.
And you have to, that has to be first if you're ever going to be successful in the people business, and you have to like people. You naturally have you can create it, right? You can learn, but you have to be with people.
Yeah.
And you have to enjoy it.
Yeah, I mean, I wrote an article when I was at Caliber called Relationships Matter.
Okay.
You know, because they do matter.
Yeah.
Your relationships will be your initial base of clients. They'll be your initial base of support. You know, when you're starting a business, you need that support from many different angles, not just the financial component. I mean, it's so much more than that. It's the word of mouth marketing that comes from that. And so relationships matter in every business. I can't think of a single business that can operate without relationships that isn't just a subsidy.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Tell me about, so when you were working over at the home builder, how was that job different? Was it everything you expected? What was the difference between being on those two sides? Because I feel like anybody listening to this mm-hmm. that has that desire to get more on the developer side, quote unquote, builder side, whatever, you know, I'd like them to hear the good, bad, and the ugly, and you've been on it. So tell us the good, bad, and the ugly.
You know, there is definitely good, bad, and ugly. You know, I was really fortunate that I worked for a phenomenal home builder. I was proud of the homes we built. I was happy to say I worked for them. You know, here in Denver is not unlike most places. Home builder can be a four-letter word. And I worked for people that really cared about their end user. So that really helped. That was really good. The bad and the ugly are really centered around the chaos of the industry. You know, you're incredibly market driven. And so when things happen, like interest rates rise, which we're in the midst of, you know, the cuts have to be made, changes have to be done, because the margins just aren't there in a lot of those businesses. And it makes it really tough. You know, it's feast or famine. But it's exciting, and you have a tangible product that you were right there in the thick of creating.
Yep. Yeah. What's some of the bad? What's some of the bad and the ugly? Something maybe you didn't expect, right? That
the sheer amount of responsibilities of someone in that position and your fiduciary obligations to your company, I mean, those are huge that you don't realize. I mean, you're writing checks on behalf of your company for hundreds of thousands of dollars. You know, you're making decisions that can change the entire course of a way a product is developed at the end. You know, the way a housing subdivision is going to be laid out, or an apartment complex is going to be laid out, or a row of townhomes, you know, and keeping in mind the aesthetically pleasing, keeping in mind practicality, cost, local stakeholders, your future homeowners. You know, the difference between home building and energy, because, you know, I'm in energy now, is people don't look at your power plant every day. You know, this isn't the biggest thing you've ever bought as a mass consumer, right? Yep. As where a home is typically the most expensive thing you've ever purchased.
Yep.
You're in it every day. You're looking at every detail. If there's a gap in your windowsill, you know.
Yep.
You know. So I think that part of it can be really challenging, and misdirected anger, I think, a lot of the time from your home buyers can be a challenge, because there's certainly some buyers that just don't get that, hey, you know, like, we're hiring these subcontractors and contractors to work for us here. And they, you know, they do 99% a good job, but that 1% is the one most consumers are going to notice.
Yeah.
So you got to have essentially flawless execution. And that's really challenging. I mean, that's a really challenging thing. And one of the big differences from going from a design engineer to, you know, being the developer, you know, as an engineer, we are ultra conservative in the way we design, the way we do things. You know, we have so much factor of safety built into everything to make sure that it won't fail in your lifetime. And when you're the developer, you know, like, those factors of safety, and I say factors of safety not loosely, like I don't mean like people are actually going to get hurt, but I mean it's going to be over designed, not value engineered,
mm-hmm.
right, to what is needed. It doesn't have to be bulletproof, right? Most people don't live in a bulletproof house. If an engineer was the developer every single time, that might be what we'd look at a whole lot more. But thankfully, there's you know, tons of great subject matter experts working with the architects, designers, landscape architects, interior designers, et cetera, that are really honing in the product and making it cost effective. You know, which is an important thing when buying a house.
Yeah.
You know, we're both homeowners, so I know that, you know, you got to have the right bang for your buck for what you need. You might need more square footage, but you can't really afford more where you currently live, so you have to move farther out. Or maybe you want more of a view. Well, to get the view here in Greenwood Village where we're at, I mean, that's out of 99% of people's possibilities, but you can move a little bit farther and get that.
Yeah.
You know, same with quality. You know, you could have a concrete home with reinforced steel. Yeah, it's never going to fall down, but I mean, it might not
going to be as aesthetically pleasing.
It's not going to be aesthetically pleasing, and it's a little bit of overkill, you know.
And now tell us what you're doing now and kind of what your job title is now, because it's a pretty sexy company. It's a sexy sexy job, and
I love
you know it. A lot of people would never leave the home builder developer world, but you love it now, and bigger scale maybe, or tell us a little bit about what do you do now and what's your title and what are you doing?
So I work for one of the largest energy companies in the world. We're definitely up there, especially in the renewable energy sector. We're called AES. I completely love the company. I love the company culture. I love the way the company operates. I love the resources at my disposal within the company when it comes to project execution and project development. You know, I have a person for almost anything.
And what type of projects are you guys developing? So you guys developing?
Yeah, we develop and build utility scale solar, wind, and battery storage. So I work for a subsidiary that focuses specifically on those things. Different developers have different size portfolios in different regions. My region's just strictly California, and it comes out to a couple gigawatts of energy development within the portfolio that really that's my day to day is managing those and advancing those to hopefully build them. And some of them are currently being built and some will be built and some might not make it. They may not financially make sense, or an area might not need that excess power after all, or, you know, things change in that business. There's a lot of players in that business since the passing of the Inflation Reduction Act. And so, you know, that's making it more and more competitive and more challenging, as good pieces of land are sucked up and, capacity needs by the grid itself in California and the off takers, their needs and wants are changing, and pricing is getting really competitive in that space. So it's made for a really interesting, day-to-day workflow.
Okay. Yeah. And you're pretty happy in the job.
Oh, I love it. Yeah.
And just station identification real quick. I actually helped Chance get this position.
Yeah.
And so you have a lot of people, which I love hearing that you're happy. You have a lot of people that have maybe give me an opportunity to talk about a little bit what I do for a minute. And just I'm always telling people, whether it doesn't have to be me, but the industry you're in, try to find a really good headhunter, recruiter, somebody, and build an established relationship. Because, is that complete bullshit, or what do you think?
Absolutely not. Okay. I would completely agree with you. You know, you've helped me and for multiple roles that I've been put in, and I think the relationship has developed into your advocacy. I think there's very few people, with the exception of me and my wife, that are, the largest advocates for my career other than you. When I've felt unhappy in a role, when I've felt it's time for a change, when I've felt, how do I get from here to there? Mm-hmm. You know, because we have that relationship, I call you and I say, hey, Jason, you know, what should I do? You know, give me just an outsider's perspective. It's not a democracy. I'm not going to take your vote to the board. At the end of the day, it's my choice. It's my life, my career. But I like to have a sounding board, and that relationship has really stewarded that. And I think the other part is you've always been really honest with me about, hey, you know, this might not be the perfect fit, but it could be.
Yeah.
You know, why don't you look at it? Why don't you talk to them?
Yeah.
Why don't we have an interview? Why don't we grab lunch with them and kind of see if there's synergy? Because, you know, professional career development is, it's almost like dating.
Yeah.
You know, and you got to kind of find, hey, could I spend the rest of my life with this person?
Yeah.
And
a lot of things change.
Life
and M&A, companies change.
Oh, but, yeah.
But I'm always, you know, folks out there do very much. Obviously, I'm always available, but whatever it is, whether you're in nursing, retail, whatever it is, always, you know, if you find somebody, hopefully make sure that they're genuine and they have your best interests in mind, because I think that you can really develop a good relationship and hopefully find somebody you trust that gives you the good, bad, and the ugly there too.
Yeah, I mean, as an engineer, and this might be unique to this industry, it might be unique to others, but recruiters reach out almost daily.
Yep.
And, you know, I've had to set some boundaries with them. You know, for me, it shows how much they care or don't care when they come to me in a cold LinkedIn message or a cold phone call or cold email and ask and court me for a role that doesn't make any sense with my experience.
Yeah.
You know, you're just essentially resume hunting and then, you know, yeah, you're reaching out with these roles, and it's like, what on earth in my schedule, in my experience would tell you that I would be a good fit for that?
It's a race to the bottom right now. But let's turn it back, because this, you know, I just always think that element is super important for people to know. This isn't a staffing podcast. It's more kind of diving in to your experience and kind of your story and different ways to get, you know, for people to hear and say, hey, listen, this maybe isn't such a big jump from A to Z. Because this person did it. But what I want to ask you, what about mentors? Do you belong to any groups? Do you belong to any men's groups or mentorship groups? And tell us a little bit about.
Yeah. You know, I have mentors in my life for most areas of my life. You know, I have mentors that help me with my, you know, my family relationships. I have mentors that help me in my career development, you know, mentors that help me become a better engineer, mentors that are helping me become a better developer. You know, I've had mentors in my life before for physical reasons. You know, I need to get in better shape.
You look great, by the way. What you told me before set, you're doing the carnivore diet.
Yeah.
And dude, you look great.
I feel great.
I got a guy in here that I work with doing it. I mean, the dude looks, he looks almost as good as you do.
Well, thank you.
And but he hasn't been doing as long as you've been doing it. He's been doing it for about 2 months.
Yeah.
And I mean, he just looks phenomenal. You look, and sorry, we'll circle back to what you're here for, but you've been doing it for how long?
So I started kind of down the path of wanting to lose some weight and be just a healthier person about 6 months ago. It was June. And, you know, from kind of a timeline perspective, it started out just kind of evaluating, taking inventory and stock of what I'm eating, right? And things that exist in my life that I think are healthy or whatnot. You know, you look at the back, you look at the ingredients. If there's a bunch of stuff I can't pronounce, it's probably not that good for me. If there's a bunch of artificial stuff, it's probably not that good for me. If there's, you know, bioengineered things, probably not that good for me. And then looking at, you know, kind of the macronutrient side of it too, of like, you know, a glass of milk has like 20 grams of carbs. Like, I was like, whoa, that's alarming actually. And I've played with carb diets before, of kind of evaluating those. And so that carb consciousness kind of parlayed into a keto, nice, keto mindset. And, you know, I was kind of dealing with some, like, I would say minor mental health issues, you know, just kind of feeling in a funk.
Yep.
Everything in life's doing fine. I just feel kind of crummy.
And it's helping?
Well, a friend of mine who's, he's kind of an Instagram model type. He owns a gym. We went to high school together. We were talking and he was sharing with me about how he was going through some of that stuff, and he switched his diet around to the carnivore diet, and how he just noticed all this mental sharpness come and just clarity, and he felt good, and he had all this energy. And so I was like, well, you know what? I'm an open-minded guy.
I like it.
I'll give it a roll. Yep. And so I started down the path, and you know, kind of having the experience in the keto world, you know, when you're not getting carbohydrates, you have to really watch that fat intake, make sure you're getting enough, which a lot of people make that mistake. And this experiment goes, can go poorly for you if you're not getting enough of what you actually need to do this. You know, and so there's certain meats that I really don't eat a lot of, and there's some meats that I eat a ton of. And, yeah, down 52 pounds as of yesterday morning.
Congratulations, man.
Since June, and my energy levels are great. My muscle density is just through the roof. I feel
love
full
it.
Life. You know,
wife can't keep her hands off you the whole nine yards. You look damn good, brother.
I don't know if I'd go that far. You have to ask her.
So you got mentors in all these different elements of your life, yeah. And I'm guessing that includes your career.
Yeah.
Well, what about you just, congratulations, you just had a newborn baby not too long ago.
Yeah.
It's number two.
Baby number two.
How, why do people struggle with being able to balance, you know, being in a high caliber career and additional family life? What's your secret? How do you, what are some advice you got? How do you deal with it?
You know, I think one of the biggest things is understanding your priorities. I mean, these aren't new concepts. You know, these priorities that I have at least are 4,000 to 5,000 years old, you know, and they go in this order. They go God, my wife, my kids, my family, my friends, my work. And, you know, establishing pretty firm boundaries around those too. You know, something that's going to impact my wife from work, she's a stakeholder. I need to talk to her about that. If I got to go to a site in California, or I have to go to a meeting late at night, or, you know, I'm going to be on some podcast with some recruiter, you know, I got to talk to my wife about that and make sure she's okay. I mean, with the demands of my life that sometimes can come, but, you know, maintaining that and maintaining really healthy boundaries. And then the last thing is really just do what's in front of you. I know that sounds so elementary and almost cliche, but that's what works for me. I can't think too far in the future. I can't think too far in the past. I got to stay right here where I'm at and accomplish what's in front of me. You know, there's little things throughout my day that really help with that. You know, good communication is a big one.
Okay.
Every week we try to have a family meeting where we go over what our schedule's like, big spend items. Hey, this bill is due. You know,
I like that.
These are our balances. So a big part of it is consistently keeping a good inventory of all the areas of your life.
Yeah.
So you know where the deficiencies are so that you can be efficient working through them. Because, you know, when you have...
Your wife has a pretty high functioning stressful job too herself.
Yeah. Yeah. My wife's an attorney, you know, and very busy with that line of work. And it's demanding on her. There's a lot of travel for her and things like that. And so... You know, with both of us having that, we've had to do different things to try to make not only our marriage work, but our parenting work and our careers work.
Mm-hmm.
And having all of those in synergy, as well as like having a day off once in a while, you know, and just kind of really honoring things like a day off every week that we really try to do nothing and get rest. That has been ultra critical for us.
Yeah, I love it. That's great. That's great advice. God, country, God, family, country. You forgot country, but I'll just throw that in there.
Well, I
mixed that up.
You that's after friends and work and stuff, you know.
Would you do it all over again? Would you have chased the architectural world?
No.
Would you stay in civil?
Yeah. I mean, architects have to have heroes too.
Yeah. Got him. What challenges do you face kind of in your career today? What are some of the biggest challenges you think?
You know, innovation has been a big one lately. With certain things now, like we're looking at domestic content products and things like that. So really learning about like this whole new caveat to a whole new business, right? So I'm already in a new industry, you know, being in the energy sector, something I've never done before, and really trying to figure out how to be innovative, how to be competitive. You know, there's a lot of really good companies in that space. And, you know, one of the pitfalls is, I mean, innovation's at the forefront of all of it. Right now we're seeing tons of investment, both from foreign, international sources, grant money, universities, you name it, to try to really improve the renewable energy industry, mm-hmm. right? And we have to build it to improve it.
Yeah.
And so there's this kind of catch-22. I don't think the industry is where we want it to be yet, but I think it's getting there really rapidly. You know, with that comes a series of change of education on a really regular basis where it has to get disseminated to everyone. Hey, this is now a thing. Hey, this new product exists, you know, and you got to learn about it from a technical standpoint, cost standpoint, practicality standpoint.
And are you taking that initiative on your own?
Sometimes.
Okay.
Sometimes it's being disseminated to me. Sometimes I'm the one that finds it and disseminates it out to others. And we have a really good culture at our company to where you're not afraid to call someone that you might not know.
Yeah.
You know, we have several thousand employees.
Tell me about it. Yeah. That's my life.
Yeah.
Call somebody you don't know.
Yeah. The king of the cold call. Yeah,
the king of the cold call. I like that. So let me ask you this. Cause you're pretty elevated in your career. You're a young dude. How old are you?
I'm 33.
You're 33. You're advancing your career for a lot of people. I guess what's the secret? I'd imagine since I've known you and from what I've heard about you in the industry is that you're built very similar to me, like built to hustle, built to work, workhorse. But tell me a little bit about what you think differentiates you, and how do you get 33 to be in the position you're in today?
You know, I mean, that's a complicated question in a lot of ways, but I kind of alluded to this a little bit, but I think really taking stock on a regular basis, you know, there's kind of a concept here. What business that doesn't take an inventory is going to be successful? You know, you got to itemize how many Snicker bars you have in your convenience store to know if you got an employee stealing, if you got a good business centered around that product, your advertising's in the right place, you know, these kinds of things, right? So identifying those problems and really taking stock regularly, I think is super critical. And then also really being goal oriented. You know, I don't know how much you know about like personality tests and things like that. I'm a 3 on the Enneagram.
I hate them all, but keep going.
You know, and so that's a big part of my personality. Learning about my personality
has been fair.
Really helpful. And learning about myself and then really honing into goals. And so every year, which I'm about to start this process with the new year, I do every year, I really sit and I map out where I'm at.
Right.
Sometimes it's a pat on the back. Sometimes it's a spank on the butt.
Okay.
And then I really go, okay, where do you want to be in a year?
Yep.
What does 5 years look like? What is 10 years? And I break those same set of goals out into categories.
Right.
So I have my spiritual goals, my physical goals, my financial goals, my career goals. You know, and some of those they're all kind of tied to each other in a way.
Right? Oh yeah.
Like, you know, my career goal could be to become a bodybuilder. Well, that really impacts my financial goals and my physical goals, yeah. Right? And so really taking an inventory of where you're at and where you want to be, you know, and then really staying principled in that. It requires a lot of discipline.
Yeah.
Which it's hard. And if it was easy, everyone would be doing it. But going through that exercise annually.
Well, let's talk about that, because that's what you're leaving out what I always think is the most imperative part.
Yeah.
Everybody sets goals, right? Everybody walks into the Super Bowl with the same goal, win the game, right? Everybody, but it's all about the execution. So that's what I want to talk about. Yeah. Tell me about that. Like, how are you? What's your execution style? How are you different?
I think it has to do with an unrelentless seeking ability. I'm persistent. So if I've targeted something I want or a goal, I'll set out to go get it.
Let's go.
You know, you don't want to get in my way when that happens.
Okay.
You know, I'm going to get it.
Yep.
I'm going to get it somewhere.
Determined.
And I think that that right in itself is, I would say that's a unique quality. It has its pros and its cons like anything. You know, because sometimes I can get so laser focused on what I'm trying to achieve that I can forget a stakeholder, forget a bystander, right? But I think the truth of it all is, you know, when you look at those goals, you have to strategize, you got to make a plan, and you go, how am I going to get from A to B?
And you got to be relentless.
And sometimes you need to be relentless to get there. You know, there can be things that go wrong in that process. Feelings could get hurt or whatever. And obviously that's never the objective. But you need to set your mind on it, focus on it, and then strategize how you get there. And I think that that's a huge component that comes from mentorship. I think mentorship is, if you don't have a mentor, get one. You know,
immediately.
Immediately. Yesterday.
Finish the last 5 minutes of this and then get one after you click subscribe.
Yeah, click subscribe, get one. Thank you to our sponsors, Ripple Effect Consulting. If you don't have a mentor in your life, at least one focused around your goals, and you don't have the accountability from that mentor to go after those goals, mm-hmm. Let's just go with the bottom line. People are lazy.
Yep.
I always like to joke and say, you know, you're 98% water. And what does water do? Water always takes the path of least resistance.
Mm-hmm.
And that's our default.
Yeah.
Right. So if you want something outside of the path of least resistance, you have to go after it. It's not just going to, you're not entitled to it. It's not going to get handed to you. It's not going to fall out of the sky in your lap.
Well, I love that because I feel like whatever is being taught today is the opposite. You're entitled to it. It's going to fall in your lap and you deserve it. But what I would say too, what I think is interesting, because it comes up every time I have a conversation with people, is that I always try to tell younger, greener, whatever you want to call it, in their career, could be both, is that it's never been easier to get ahead because there's a large amount of people who aren't willing to strategize. They're not willing to put in the extra effort. They're not willing to. That's why I asked you earlier if that is all just told that you need to do some due diligence on your own, or do you kind of take that initiative? Because I feel like these attributes are imperative to get to where you're at 33 years old, where somebody's going to be listening to this at 47 trying to figure out how you got there so much faster than they did, and these might be relevant.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot that goes into career development, and it's not just the linear path of job to job. It's all the other things too. You know, Jason, I've been a serial entrepreneur. I've went down the road of some businesses that were really successful, some that weren't, sold mm-hmm. some, lost some. You know, I mean, it's all over the place.
Yep.
And you know, you can look at someone's net worth or something like that and go, man, they must make a lot of money in that job. But what you don't realize is all the extra risk that you're doing with these entrepreneurial things or these side hustles or this arbitrage or whatever it is that also can get you there. And in the meantime, you're developing skills by attempting that. You're learning about how a business operates, how to pay taxes.
Yep.
You know, how to have
profit
relationships,
and loss, all kinds of stuff. Sales.
I mean, you know, I'm probably a natural born salesman.
Yep. Amen. I hear that. Me too, brother. You're not supposed to say that anymore, but I'm bringing it back.
You're bringing it back?
Yeah. Yeah. Where it's not voodoo
to be a salesman.
Yeah. That's why I call myself the OG headhunter, because that for some reason became a bad term, but that's what we do.
You're not old enough to be OG anything.
I appreciate the compliment. Thank you. Before we sign off, man, you know, somebody listening to this, I always try to bring it back to the 18-year-old Chance thinking about what he wants to do with his career. Maybe the 20-year-old Chance, you know, maybe, like I said, the 46-year-old girl that's like, hey, I want to get, maybe it's not too late, I want to get into that. But what is the biggest takeaway that you think somebody listening to this should
find relevant? I think it's really practical. Like, look at the cost-benefit analysis of your decision. You know, a lot of people go back to school later in life, and sometimes that's a really great idea, and sometimes it's a total waste of money. You know, you got to really think about, like, what does this career actually pay?
Yep.
Right? What is that going to look like as an entry-level person at 50 years old?
Yep.
Or being a senior in this and starting over, or, you know, and so there's a lot of ways to skin the cat here, right? Yep. Really, at the end of the day, get a mentor, have them pour into your life. There's more than enough people willing to be in that role. You just have to ask.
Yeah.
And you have to have the courage and humility to get there and say, hey, you know, I need some help making this decision. I don't want to make it on my own. I don't know how to make it on my own. And the other thing is, know what you're good at by taking that inventory.
Yep.
And know what you're not good at.
I love you're all about strategizing and doing that inventory stuff. That's imperative. That's imperative that people don't kind of take a step back and be super honest with themselves and say, hey, listen.
You have to be.
Is this it? Is this it? Where is it going? So,
yeah, you have to be willing to take the criticism, take the praise. You have to be willing to change if needed, and understanding that it's not an attack on you, that yeah. you need to mold or sharpen certain areas of your life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you need that house in order.
Where are you going? What's the future, young dude? What's your future look like? You know yet? Still?
I haven't started my goals yet for this year. So
we'll have to have you back when you get.
For right now, I don't see a lot changing. I really like where I'm at. I really like the role I'm in. There's room for growth in the same role, you know, moving up the corporate ladder in that world.
Love it.
You know, I've never worked for a company this big. The largest company I've worked for was about 50 to 60 people prior to this. So, you know,
good change.
I'm giving it a whirl, and I really like it. I actually genuinely enjoy it. I love what I do. I love the people I work with. It's fun. You know, it's exciting. It's chaos. It's everything.
Is there anybody out there that might be listening to this that would be like you would like to get in touch with? Anybody that would be like beneficial for the growth of your career?
That's a great question. Elon Musk, if you're listening.
Yeah. County commissioners out in California, Elon Musk.
Yeah, you know, I mean, we deal a lot with the public servants and the elected officials in California. You know, and to them, I'd say our intentions are really good for your community, and we want to help your community,
mm-hmm.
and we want to work with you. We view our partnerships like that, because that's what they are. They're partnerships. It's not us using you, and we're not going to be used by you either. You know, we work in a reciprocal environment that there's give and take, and you know, we're happy to serve your community. My company's done, I can't even tell you how many toy drives or food drives or serve the hungry all over the country.
How does somebody get a hold of you?
LinkedIn's probably the best
LinkedIn.
Way.
Okay.
Yeah, LinkedIn is by far my most active social media. I don't really use any of the other ones.
And how do you spell your name? You want to?
Yeah, it's Chance Staley.
Chance Staley.
Yeah.
Okay.
Here in the greater Denver metro.
I love it.
Love it.
Yeah, man. Well, I appreciate you coming in. Absolutely. I want to get into more, you know, have you back at some point later time, because I want to talk about some of those serial entrepreneur stuff that's helped you grow in your career kind of on the business development side, because I know a lot of people have a lot of those questions. And even, hey, what are the design folks doing? What advice do you have for them to help win your business, you know, when you've been in that? Unfortunately, we only have so much time, but Chance, I definitely appreciate you coming in, brother.
Happy to.
Definitely
happy
super to. Fun, but yeah, man, I appreciate you listening.
Can we get one more gunshot?
Yeah, let's go. Get them. Click that like button. Definitely appreciate you coming in today, and let's all keep grinding.